Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I got a new drug for you, Carline. It's about 90 degrees out there.
I know.
You outside today?
Awesome.
Oh, it's beautiful today.
I'm going to be in the pool in like 3 days.
Yeah, you know what? It's about pool weather.
I know.
And I'm the biggest pool cold weather wimp ever.
I can't stand
it. I usually jump in the pool about July 20th.
Yeah.
When it's about 112. And then the minute it cools off in like September, I'm done. Do you get in the pool when it's cold, JJ, or no?
You know what's crazy is I actually dipped my foot in my apartment pool today.
You did?
Just because it's right outside my gym. I didn't get all the way in, though.
Right.
Yeah, I'm exactly like you. Ocean pool, it's still going to be like a month for me.
Yeah, I'm so bad. I live in Florida. I have an outdoor pool, and I have a pool heater. Isn't that awful? I actually have a pool heater because I don't want to get it.
Well, I mean, I get that. I mean, yeah, it's because it's tough once you get to like October,
right,
to get in it. And I mean, that's the thing that's so funny about getting older is like when I was a kid, I would get in the pool in February. It didn't matter. I was impervious to the cold.
Right.
Now it's like it's got to be perfect or I just have no interest.
Yeah, if you go to the ocean right now, there's only children.
Right.
You know, braving the cold waters.
Yeah. When we moved into this house, JJ, Amber was 6, all right, and we built a pool right away. I mean, it didn't matter how cold it was. She'd come out. She and her little friends would come out. Their lips would be blue.
Mm-hmm.
I said yeah, either A, she's going to die, or B, she'll bop back in tomorrow. It'd be one of the two. So there's that. So it is hot. I love the good weather there. All right, a lot of things to get to today on the program. Brett Hastings is going to join us just a minute, in about 10 minutes or so, I should say. Sports in courts today is – it was an interesting topic. We do sports and courts on a weekly basis, and we try to come up with fun topics or interesting ones. I don't know how fun this one is. But I didn't do much on the show about O.J. Simpson dying because I just didn't. And I don't know, was it over a weekend? I'm trying to remember. Did he die on a weekend?
No, I think he died during the week.
Did he? But
I mean, really, what's there to?
You did talk about it. It's not like you totally ignored it.
We did the first segment. We didn't talk anything about, which is what we're going to get to today. We didn't talk anything about the obligations that he has post passing away.
Right, right.
And so, to the Goldman family. And that's
the legality that I'm curious about, and Brett's going to kind of break it down for us a little today, is do the victims have access to the estate?
He hadn't paid it, is my understanding. He still owed them
right
a lot of money from the civil suit.
If you followed it, you probably know what happened. He was found not guilty of the criminal charge and then later lost a civil suit for gigantic dollars to the Goldman family and I guess the Brown family too, but I mean, certainly to all. And so now that he's gone, can they claim some of the estate? I think it's an interesting question.
No doubt about it.
Then his attorney, who I guess is his executor, came out at first and said, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure the Goldmans don't get any money. Then backtracked like crazy,
right?
And said, "You know what? Let me change my mind. Let me." He even referred to himself as backtracking. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's the part I'm really fascinated to get Brett's take on. Is can he get this? I mean, possibly disbarred.
You got to wonder, right?
Yeah, because I mean, that was a pretty stunning turnaround.
Yeah. So we got that. We got some Jaguar talk, some Gator talk, a lot of things we'll get to today on the program. Love it that you're with us on this Wednesday. Our Wednesday is always brought to you by our friends at Ricketts Electric. Man, Zach Ricketts is a good dude, and the Ricketts Electric folks do a good job. If you saw some of the stuff they do at our ballpark, we call them so much. I even tell Donna Murphy, who manages that for us, are we calling Zach again? Give Zach a day off. Okay, but he is so good. They do a wonderful job. So our friends from Ricketts Electric, always a Ricketts Electric Wednesday around here. All right, a couple things I want to get to. I want to start with Foye Luikun for a second. We played his sound the other day. I think he's a really good tackler. He's a really good player. Maybe not a dynamic playmaker. Yeah, I mean he's not flying through the backfield on blitz packages and sacking quarterbacks and then knocking down passes 20 yards downfield like Ray Lewis did. But I think he's a really good, and I'm going somewhere with this. But how good a player do you think Foye is?
I think I'd say very good. I don't think he's necessarily elite, in terms of, you know, particularly when you're talking about generational guys like Ray Lewis. But I do think for this day and age, I mean, I think he's you know, certainly in the top quadrant of middle linebackers in the league. And he did do a better job of becoming more of a playmaker. His first couple of years here, it was, you know, he led the league in tackles, which is obviously great. But he even by his own admission said, I need to make more big game-changing plays. And last year he did have three fumble recoveries. He forced a fumble. He had an interception, and he had 2.5 sacks. So, you know, if just a slight bump in those numbers, I would say would be enough to get him over the threshold of finally getting that, you know, all-pro kind of recognition, that Pro Bowl recognition. He had 173 tackles last year. That was basically 46 more than any other player on the roster. So he is a big cog in the machine for the Jaguars and an excellent ambassador as well.
Where would you rank? Give me in the Hayes Carline ranking, because I'll do a power poll. I'm not afraid.
Oh, yeah.
I'll drop a power poll like on a Wednesday, a Tuesday, in the middle of the night. I'll just do it. The Hayes Carline Jaguar inside linebacker all-time power poll. All right? If you had it off the top of your head, Daryl Smith high, Mike Pete high.
Puzz
very high.
Yeah.
What's the list?
Well, I'd probably say Puzlesny, Smith.
Mike Pete?
Yeah, Peterson, then Oluokun.
That's probably it, isn't it? Now, it depends on what you call Kevin Hardy, because he was really an outside linebacker.
I'd say outside.
Yeah,
more.
I would too. He wasn't a blitzer. He wasn't an edge guy, but he was more outside. You don't think of him as a middle linebacker type, you know? I think of Brian Schwartz and Tommy Mack. Our own Tommy Mack is very good inside linebacker type, but they're inside linebackers. So you're going Paz 1. You're going Daryl Smith 2. I might flop that. Mike Pete 3. And Foye Luikun 4. That's pretty much it, isn't it? I mean, are we missing somebody? It's been 30 years. We're not missing many.
Yeah, I'm trying.
And again, there's a lot, like I said, Brian Schwartz was a
good player. I'm always bad about
this,
so it feels like I always.
And we'll miss somebody along the line. But, I mean, again, Kevin Hardy, who's a fantastic player and a great guy. Kevin's still around, good friend. But I think of him more as an old-school 4-3 outside linebacker. Isn't that what it felt like?
Yeah.
He was. I mean, in fact, he was on those teams that Brian Schwartz and then Tommy Mack were the middle linebacker on. So I'm trying to think of – I would think – so the point is Foye Luikun's in the conversation. I don't think there's much question, right, that he would be in that conversation.
I think he'd have to be. And, you know, again, he's got a chance to keep going up that list. But, they've had pretty good history with that position. Puzlesny, he had the ability. He had good hands. He had good savvy. His interception totals were always very high compared to his peers at the position. Daryl Smith obviously was sensational. That was probably the number one, I'd say, mistake when they launched the Dave Caldwell, Gus Bradley era. Is he was a guy that they shipped off after 2012 because they really wanted to strip it down.
Right.
Probably should have held on to him because he had some pretty good years after he left here.
Where would you put in the year after Puzz was gone, where would you put Telvin Smith and Miles Jack? None of them felt like a middle linebacker, even though they were the two inside linebackers after Puzz was gone, but they both felt like outside linebackers.
Telvin, definitely.
Yeah. Like Daryl Smith and Mike Pete felt like middle linebackers.
Yeah, type. Miles was more interchangeable, I would say. They forced that, where he supplanted Puzz when Puzz was still here. So, obviously, Miles could do both. But Miles certainly had great moments. But Telvin, to me, would be almost exclusively outside.
And by the way, if the list goes deep enough, I'll put my guy Tommy Mack on it. He's a good player and played on the really good teams, you know. It's hard to have any list of Jaguar linebackers without Kevin Hardy because he was so good. But he just – if I'm looking at guys that I think of as the middle linebacker, if I think of as – if I'm telling myself that Foye, and again, it's been it's a 3-4 defense, so there's not a middle linebacker – but he's the Mike linebacker, right? He in the Mike scheme, he's
correct.
The Mike. He's the Mike. As was Daryl Smith, as was Mike Peterson, and obviously as was Paul Posluszny until the end when they remember they moved him to Sam at the end. Puz,
right?
Remember that? But he's a middle linebacker type. So interesting stuff. But I think
Aluakin has a chance, I would say, with this new contract to get close to Puz's team record for career tackles. It's 587. He's not going to get there this year, but if he's healthy for the next 2 years here, he'll leave as the all-time leading tackler here.
How about that? So you know what? If that's the case, he's going to be on some list then, bro.
Right.
He's going to be on some list then. What are your expectations? And I'm the only guy in town that talks about this guy, but I'll still talk about him. What are your expectations for Ventrell Miller? What do you expect?
Nothing.
Well, yeah. Healthy or never good.
If he does anything, to me, it'll be a bonus. And I liked him at Florida. I thought he was few guys that actually tried on defense. I didn't really get the pick here in the fourth round.
Yeah, it was a very criticized time to take.
Yeah, that didn't make a ton of sense to me. Obviously, you hope. Like any conversation when we're talking about a young Jaguar, you hope for the best. Hope he has a fantastic career here. But I would think that how I approach it is anything that Ventrell Miller gives them is a bonus.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good player. I guess that's my Gator bias coming out. That's what everyone's going to think anyway. But, boy, he was a good player at Florida. My biggest question is, will he ever be healthy?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean,
he's a – number one, he's a little guy.
Right.
And when you're a little guy in that sport – I mean, he's Sam Mills-like little. I mean, he's a little guy. He's Zach Thomas little.
And you've lost basically 2 years of development, certainly lost his entire rookie season.
Right.
And it just doesn't seem like, as much as we would like to think, it seems like when these guys miss an entire, like they miss their rookie year, there's not a lot of growth that goes into that, even though there's the meetings and, you know, they're around and they're part of the team. Like it just still doesn't seem like for very many players they get much out of that. It's until they're out there and playing, it just doesn't seem like it seems like the development is in complete stagnation. I think he'll be the exception to that.
I think you're right. I think it's hard to develop. It's hard to develop when you're not playing. Just like it's hard to lead when you're not out there.
And really even for Ventrell, then the scheme got changed. So, I mean, really his rookie year is now a complete waste because not only was he not healthy – but even if he was really attentive in meetings, and even if he took a ton of mental reps and felt like he had a really good hold on what would be asked of him eventually, well, now it's a new coordinator. So, you know, I mean, he's basically a rookie.
Yeah. So I agree. But let's put it this way. As much as I like Shaq Quarterman, Jacksonville guy, a lot of people compared him. Ventrell is way more athletic than Ventrell. There's a big difference there, in my opinion, a big difference from an athleticism standpoint. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, Foye Aluakun, we had him on yesterday, or we had his comments on yesterday, I should say. He joined the ladies from Helmets and Heels in studio, which is very cool. Yeah, Puz, Daryl Smith, Mike Pete, Foye Aluakun, in terms of true middle linebackers, that would kind of be the group. All right, it's about time for Sports and Courts. JJ, fire it up.
Now time for Sports in Courts, legal issues in the sports world with Brett Hastings from the Hastings Injury Law Firm. Hit back with Hastings.
Brett Hastings joins us now by phone. A very interesting topic today. Brett, how you doing, man?
Doing great. How about you? Better than last week, for sure.
Yeah, I hear you. Glad you're feeling better. Brett was under the weather last week, so it's good to have him back on. Hey, I've wondered about this. If you haven't heard these segments before, Brett does a particularly good job of breaking down when the world of sports meets the world of law and how things happen. So O.J. Simpson passed away. We didn't know a whole lot on the show about it, but O.J. Simpson died. So obviously, for people that don't know the story, most know by now he was accused of killing his ex-wife and her friend. He was found not guilty from a criminal standpoint, but then he lost a civil suit to Goldman, the dad of the friend in the Brown family. Never paid all of it, or certainly owed a lot of money at the end. So the question becomes, how much of his estate can the Goldman family claim? How does that work? Brett, give us an overview before we get into the specifics of this. How does that stuff work?
So what happens is, you know, once someone passes, and if they have, you know, a lot of money, assets, or whatever, Most people end up setting those things up, putting them into a trust, because to the extent you can, you want to eliminate going through what we call probate, right? In this case, he does have some assets. He did create a trust. There is going to be a probate. There was a statement which actually was recanted. I was looking here and I thought was interesting with CBS, where the executor,
right,
who's like his main, kind of became his main lawyer, there in Nevada, is going to be the executor of the estate. We also hear personal representative, right? That's the term that we hear here in the state of Florida. So anybody that is owed money by O.J. Simpson and his estate, they can file a claim, you know, and say, hey, we're owed this money, you know, what have you. Are they old medical bills? You know, those are the types of things that we can see at times that would come up. Now, here, there was a $33 million personal injury judgment that was entered. I was trying to find out. I don't believe much, if any, of it has been paid. And with legal interest, what do you guys think the amount of that judgment is now, the original $33 million judgment?
It was $33 million to start?
Yep.
So I would say like $72 million now?
It's got to be a lot more. Yeah. Would it double?
No, it's $114
million. Wow, tripled.
And so legal interest is compounded daily, and there's a rate that's set by the state. In our state, you know, I should know this. We were filling out some things the other day. I think it was around 8%. I've seen it go as high as 12 and 13%. And every single day that judgment, you know, accrues interest. So, you know, it's an incredibly large amount of money. You know, one of the things that we want to do with wills, right, and the way that we distribute our estate, and not when you have, you know, kind of extreme circumstances like this, is when somebody passes, you want to effectuate their will, right? Well, that still goes up against whether or not they're valid debts that are out there.
I took
the statements the other day that we don't want to pay the Goldmans is probably the still the specific, you know, will of OJ. And this gentleman said it, you know, who is going to act as the executor, and then within one day said, you know what, we're not going to necessarily take the position that they're not going to be paid or anything else. And I think that was the legal reality coming in.
Let me stop you. You're talking about Malcolm Laverne, who was the Nevada-based lawyer, who's the executor of the will. Hayes asked a question before we had you on that he wanted me to ask you, or he was going to ask you. Can this guy get in any legal trouble by making that comment? Because he backed off it so fast. I mean, is there a disbarring or something happening here? Because
No, but, you know, there's a probate judge that they're going to all be dealing with in Nevada.
I got it.
So professionally, that's not probably really smart. You know, when's the last time either of you guys remember an executor coming out and making statements like that? I was relatively shocked by that. I think probably some of his legal colleagues there were like, whoa, you know, I don't think this is the tack to take. And then as you saw, he went and corrected that in the story with CBS News.
Okay. All right. So you gave us kind of the overview, and probate is essentially, if it's not properly directed in a trust, it goes to probate, which means a court's got to decide, right? If I understand that correctly, that's essentially what probate is.
Well, you know, if you don't have a will or anything, you could go intestate and you could go into probate court just because of the nature of these issues, right? Probate court would be the court that would have the jurisdiction, and they would go and administer, you know, all of these issues. Sometimes not the estate are not the ones that file. Sometimes somebody else will file to set up an estate or to set up things so that they have to go through the court.
Yeah.
So I don't know who instituted it in this case.
Okay. Your guess, what's going to happen? I want you to make a prediction here. Do you think, you don't have to go dollar for dollar, but will the Goldman family get any of his estate now that he's gone? Since from a civil standpoint, they still owe him money.
You know, I don't know enough about the way it's structured. I think they would get some money. They're never going to see the totality of that judgment. I think that's for sure. You know, one of the things that you can't go after is if somebody has a pension. My understanding is that primarily, you know, in this case, OJ had been living off his pension, and that was how he was able to kind of stave off the creditors, you know, up until that point. So I don't know that he really amassed a whole lot of other money. So what I think you will see happen is you kind of then would see like a pro rata distribution of potential claims, right? So if there's $3 million and they were a creditor, they would get some, you know, there is a trust in place to try to get things to his children. So, you know, there'll be some complexities as it relates to it. Will they get zero? I don't believe they'll get zero. Will they get $114 million? No way.
Yeah, and so final thing then, just with very, very good answers. This is decided by a probate judge. There's not a jury. There's not peers. At the end of the day, that money is disseminated by one judge who decides, right?
As a general rule, yes. I'm not, but you know,
I hear you.
There's big differences from state to state.
Gotcha.
And this is something that only happens at the state court level.
Gotcha. Interesting stuff. Great work as always. That is Brett Hastings. He's from the Hastings Injury Law Firm, and that is Sports and Courts. Thank you, Brett.
Take care.
All right. That's a really interesting story.
Absolutely.
I mean, if there's a lot of money in there, do the Goldmans now finally get it? You know, or some of it,
right? And that's the thing. And it also was such a interesting story. The venom that Simpson's executor had for the Goldmans.
I know.
You know, it was just like it was stunning. Good to see that his reversal and saying they're going to be hyper transparent. I mean, obviously the Goldmans don't really care about the money, but you know, it's it'll be interesting to follow.
That is Sports in Courts, and that is Brett Hastings. We'll get it back to stuff on the field. Billy Napier said he's calling plays. A very interesting topic. Let's discuss it after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on The Frangie Show. Ricketts Electric, the power connection you can trust.
And they do a terrific job. My friend Zach Ricketts, the Ricketts folks. Call them at 904-320-5960. I want to read it again. 904-320-5960. Listen, if your business needs an electrician, it's good to have a guy that's this good a guy and this good of an electrician. We use him for our family and for our business. Ricketts Electric. Zach Ricketts runs it. He's the boss. 904-320-5960 is the number to call. Josh Pate, the late kick Josh, was in Gainesville doing his podcast. He sat down with Billy Napier. And there's been a lot of questions about who's going to call plays next year. Billy kind of answered that.
We have reallocated some of our responsibilities. I think giving Russ Callaway the co-coordinator title, giving him a little bit more ownership throughout the offseason and some of the things that we do in-house. But ultimately, I feel like it's in the best interest of our team for me to continue to call the plays, right? So if I didn't feel that way, I would have made a decision to make a change. So I'm excited about the input that we're getting from the staff and some of the things we've done to reorganize. But overall, you know, more focus on the things that matter. You know, like I mentioned before, I don't think the place is under construction. I think it's built. And I think this is going to allow me an opportunity to focus a little bit more on the things that matter. And play calling's a part of that.
Billy Napier's comments, I think it's in the best interest of our team for me to continue to call plays. What was your reaction when you heard it?
Well, it's built.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard that before.
It's not under construction. We have heard it before.
It is built. Hopefully. Hopefully.
What did you think when you heard
hopefully
it?
Hopefully it truly is built. I would say that I don't have a huge problem with Napier retaining the play calling. He's got to get much better with the trick play component. It'll be interesting if he's ever specifically asked that. Because I don't think he ever was in spring. Josh didn't go there, which I certainly get. I think as a play caller, he's fine. And I do think they produced some, you know, I'd say good offense last year. I don't think it was sensational, but I don't get the sense that offensively that was their biggest issue last year. I think the defense was about as bad as it's been in program history. So I don't have a big problem with him holding control of it. Obviously, it's a big part of his identity as a coach. I understand that. And I think some of this is I'm going down with the ship if I'm going down. So I'm going to go down calling my own plays. I'm not going to put my future in somebody else's hands to do something that is obviously so critical on game day. I can buy into his, we're in our third year here, our roster is much better. Our roster is much more our roster. The staff has some continuity now, particularly on that side of the ball. So there's less for me to worry about, so I can focus more on play calling. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's two or three things here. Number one, I'll say this. The offense wasn't the problem. It's kind of the conventional conversation piece. I agree with that, but I still like to see him do some things differently. Get the plays in quicker. Don't dawdle as much. Not as much. You know what I mean? The things that drove you crazy, the clap, clap, look, clap. So I think he can be the right play caller still, Hayes, but improve as a play caller. You know what I mean? I think you can be the same guy and improve. I think that's part of it. The other thing is, my biggest concern with him as a play caller is, does it make him not as good at the other things? You know, most head coaches are very good at overseeing special teams. We all know the special teams gaffes, and I'm not worried about the spring game. I agree with you on that. But that's the other thing is will it affect him doing the other things? The offense did get better. The offense found a rhythm. And I do think it helps, since you have the same quarterback back, to not change play callers, because I do get the sense in my soul and watching this in my heart that this team is going to be better than it was last year. I don't know how much better, and it's a hard schedule, but I do get this. There's something watching the spring game again, only on TV. You were there. There's something different, a connectivity, a little more athleticism. Graham Mertz really looks, if he stays healthy, he really looks like the guy. Again, I'm not predicting they're all of a sudden going to be one of the good teams in America. They're not there yet. But I think improved, I would be surprised. FSU took a very big jump between Mike Norvell's second year and third year, a very big jump. I wouldn't be surprised if Florida took a jump. It's not going to be as big a jump because the schedule's way harder. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a jump. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I agree, and I do think that is part of it, is Grant, you have – it really should be at this point Graham Mertz's offense. He's obviously started a ton of games in college. He has now started a full season with Florida operating under Billy Napier. So I think it is important for them to keep that line of communication the same, and obviously now it will be enhanced because they both have – Mertz has a much better idea – of the stuff that Napier has in his playbook that he likes and the stuff that he doesn't. And Napier has a very crystal clear idea of the things that Mertz can execute at a high level and the stuff that he has trouble with. So I think keeping that streamlined was important. You know, there's also the DJ Lagway factor in this. I mean, we don't know, perhaps a big part of that recruiting pitch, because I still can't figure out why DJ Lagway signed with Florida. Maybe a big part of that recruiting pitch was, I'm the play caller. Your head coach, you're committing to me. I'm the play caller. There, you know, it's going to be you and me in this. You know, you tell me what you like, you don't like, and I'm the one calling the plays, DJ. So it's going to be how you want it when it's your time here. You know, so maybe there was some allure to that. And if he went and hired an OC, then he'd be breaking that. So I think at the end of the day, Billy Napier fancies himself as a great offensive mind. And he wants to be revered as such. And the only way that's going to happen is if he continues to call plays, and he has to hope that his offense does do well enough and his defense finally decides to start tackling people and it leads to some wins. And now all of a sudden, if he does, like if by some miracle they went 9-3 in the offense, and Mertz had a huge year, and look at how well he's managing the Lagway component, and Montrell Johnson's having this big year. I mean, Billy Napier is going to get a lot of praise nationally for that. And I do think that there's some ego involved and I think some confidence. And I don't have a problem with that. This is his, I don't know about dream job,
right,
but it's his probably the biggest job he's ever going to have.
That's right.
And I understand his decision on, I'm not going to delegate this. This is what I love to do as a football coach. I love calling plays. And I feel like I'm good at it, and I'm not going to give it up. If it doesn't work out and I get fired, I get fired. But he's betting on himself, and
yeah.
You know, I understand that.
And I'm going to say one other thing. And you and I were in Gainesville Friday, and we're around a lot of folks sort of in the know, okay? I would be, And I don't want to act. I don't want to act like this is some. Boy, I'm a great reporter and great inside information because you heard the same thing I did. We were both there. I would be very surprised if Billy Napier doesn't make it to year four now. You agree or disagree?
I agree. I think it would have to just be.
It would have to be a disaster.
A complete disaster.
I want to say this again. I would be very surprised, and a lot of it has to do with Hayes and my trip to Gainesville. I'm being honest. You were there. Mm-hmm. I would be very surprised if Billy Napier doesn't make it to year four. Now, go 2-10 and look poorly coached, and that's a disaster. You know, heck, I guess 4-8 and poorly coached is a disaster. But forget the number for a second. I would be very, very surprised if Billy Napier is not the Florida foot. And this is a complete change for me, by the way. I'd be very surprised if he's not the Florida football coach in 2025.
Yeah, and again, we've talked about this with other administrations, other schools. You can feel a certain way in April, but when after loss piles up in September, October, and November, it's a lot harder to have that conviction on staying with a coach. So, yeah, I do think that I will say this. I now believe that if he wins 6, he might be safe. Whereas before, I thought no chance a 6-6 Florida coach gets a fourth year. I think there's a chance. And again, this also does go back to the environment in which this sport is now existing and how so much of it has changed in the last 3 years. I mean, Billy Napier gets hired and basically the entire sport changes in how it operates. So I do think this is a really special circumstance where if you're Florida and you like Billy Napier and you like the culture that he's built and you like where the program is headed, you probably are going to give him a little bit more leeway because when he got hired, NIL and the portal were not how you built a roster. Now they are. So you have to allow a coach. It's hard enough going from Louisiana Lafayette to coaching the Gators. But when you add in the seismic change to the sport, I think you also have to allow that to give him some benefit of the doubt with it.
We'll take a break. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that the headlines aren't going to suck. I'm going to predict they're not going to suck
today.
That's
bold.
Well, it is bold. It is bold, but I'm going to go there. I'm going to go. You know, I just got to go. It's hot out. It's warm out.
Was I supposed to do headlines today?
We'll take a break.
I guess I'll come up with something.
Hayes headlines are next. They're brought to you by Harrell & Harrell. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather around.
It's Hayes' headlines presented by Harrell & Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve.
Hear all about it.
Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, J.J. LaSelva, I'm Hayes Carlion. Let's get into some headlines. We appreciate our friends at Harrell & Harrell. Give them a call at 251-1111. All right, Frank, our good buddy Dane Brugler of The Athletic has released a 7-round mock draft. And boy, this is interesting for the Jaguars. He has the Jaguars trading with Buffalo, moving down 11 spots to 28.
Oh.
But the Jaguars still get Kool-Aid McKinstry.
How about that?
I got to say, I kind of love that.
If you can trade out of that spot that far back, then which means you're going to get something decent in return and still get a player that good, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't know that that'll happen, but I will say I think this is about, of all the ones that I've seen, this is about as ideal as it gets for the Jaguars. Because
what do they get?
At 48, for the trade back, they get a Buffalo's comp 4th this year, and a 5th this year, then they get a 25-second.
Okay. So that's the prize.
That's the prize. But they do get a 4th and a 5th this year, right, which would give them 8 selections in the first 153 picks and 10 selections overall. But then at 48, they get Oregon receiver Troy Franklin, and Prisco is all over him.
Yeah, if you get – I will say this. This thing is deep enough at corner and receiver that I could see this, Hayes. I could see – 17 and 48, both being corner and receiver that you really like. I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoever they are.
And hopefully, I do think if the, also it's worth noting in this model that Brugler did, Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell are not available at 17.
Right.
So the top two corners were gone. Jaguars move back to 11 and Bills come up. The only players that the Jaguars passed on in this that I thought was interesting was Jared Verse. He is on the board. But again, you get three picks to move back 11 spots. You got to do that. All right. In the world of college football, Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs just keep on rolling. Blue chip quarterback Ryan Montgomery commits to Georgia today over Florida and South Carolina. Kirby just gets everybody he wants.
And that's one the Gators really wanted. He's a good basketball player, too, but he was a really good quarterback. That's one the Gators wanted, so that one's a little bit of a gut punch. I agree with you.
Yeah, speaking of the Gators, congratulations to Scotty Wilbekin. He's among the class this year for the Florida Athletic Hall of Fame. Boy, I'd forgotten how great he was. So Wilbekin, in his career, 13 NCAA tournament wins. They went to the Elite Eight his first 3 years, then the Final Four his final year.
13 wins.
13
Think
wins.
Think about that.
In the NCAA tournament. And in Wilbekin's senior year in 2013-14, he was the SEC Player of the Year, the SEC Tournament MVP, and the NCAA Regional Most Outstanding Player.
And he went to school a year early, by the way.
Right.
How many players in college basketball history, in the history of the sport, have 13 NCAA tournament wins?
Yeah.
There can't be very
That's
many.
A big,
number one, you got to stay all 4 years.
Right.
You got to go all 4 years.
Yeah.
You got to make a run all 4 years.
Right.
I did not realize that. By the way, I loved that team. Scotty Wilbekin and Michael Frazier in the backcourt. Will you get Patrick Young, of course, and Casey Prather in the front court. I thought that was a really, really fun. That starting five was as fun as any they've ever had. Won 30 games in a row.
Yeah.
They were 36-3 in the SEC, or 36-3 overall, 21-0 in the SEC. Think about that.
It was an unbelievable year. And Florida did a really cool thing in how they let Wilbekin know. They brought back an old friend who, sorry, Kentucky fans, is not your new coach.
So, Scotty, listen, real quick, I just wanted to give you a heads up on this. I wasn't sure if you were aware of this, but I got the phone call and they asked me to touch base with you, and I was so honored that they called me. But you're getting inducted into the Florida Athletic Hall of Fame in the 2024 class. So I just wanted to congratulate you on an amazing career, unbelievable job, and the fact that they asked me to get in touch with you and your dad set this all up. So when you first started, said, is this a joke? Not really, but kind of. But we had to do something to get you on there. But I just wanted to say congratulations on the Hall of Fame. You deserve it. You had an unbelievable career. And personally, I'm very happy for you.
Wow. I'm speechless. I felt something was up. Maria was acting strange. But, wow, this is the best news I could have got. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Billy Donovan, of course.
Oh, that was Billy D. Perfect guy.
Yeah.
The perfect guy. And, again, that team, he was so good, and that team was so fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was in Dallas for the Final Four.
They're almost underrated.
Yes.
In terms of Gators lore,
I mean, it's one of the greatest SEC teams of all time.
Right.
They were 21-0.
Yeah.
I mean,
hard to be.
Yeah, someone give me the list.
Yeah.
Someone please give me the list of teams that went 21-0 in SEC play, 18-0. In the regular season. Could someone dig that list up, please?
Yeah.
Someone dig up the list of teams that went 21-0 in SEC play.
Yeah.
It might be one, by the way.
It might be. Sad news in the world of Gators hoops. Rebalt grad and former Gator great Ronnie Montgomery died Monday at the age of 58. He left Florida as the all-time assist leader and still ranks fourth in school history.
I'll tell you what, when he played, he was not a starter for a lot of his career because he played behind Andrew Moten. That great backcourt of Moten and Maxwell, but you know what they did a lot? They put him in with those guys. And he'd run the point, and Moten would come play the two, and Vernon Maxwell played the three. He was a fantastic, one of the best passers, played at Rebalt, played under Bernard Wilf, went on to play at Florida on their first tournament team ever, and was one of the best passers you'll ever see. Sad to see Ronnie Montgomery pass.
Yeah, absolutely. The hot story today in the NFL is this ESPN report, three different writers contributing to this thing, suggesting that Robert Kraft warned Arthur Blank about hiring Bill Belichick and ultimately sabotaged Belichick's chances of getting the Falcons job.
Isn't that wild? I will say this. I saw a report that he was never as close to getting an NFL job as people suggested. That does not surprise me. You and I disagreed on this one. I thought he would have been an odd hire, man. I thought he was over the hill. His teams weren't very good at the end. barely with 1-4 games last year, did not manage the departure of Tom Brady very well. But I'm surprised that there's a report out that Robert Kraft submarined him. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The article goes on to suggest Belichick still wants to coach and has his eye on the Dallas, Philadelphia, and New York Giants job. Belichick will be a part of draft coverage with Pat McAfee on ESPN.
And he'll be fine. He's fun. He's sneaky funny, and I don't think he's going to coach again. I think something like that is where he's going to land.
I guess it was a matter of time before we had a story like this. Raptor center Jonte Porter has been banned for life for his role in a gambling scandal in which this wasn't just betting on games. This was faking injuries. This was giving out information to bettors. The 24-year-old has appeared in 37 career games, and his career is over.
It's bad enough when you bet on games in your sport because that could influence how you play. It's worse when you actively try and affect the outcome of the game in the gambling sense. It's a bad deal. It's a bad deal. I'm glad he suspended.
Yeah, absolutely. Lakers win last night. Warriors lose in the play-in action out west. You sorry to see Curry out so soon?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm more of a Laker fan than a Warriors fan. But, yeah, again, the Lakers drew the Nuggets, so I think they're going to be out pretty quick too. But, yeah, I am sorry. Basketball is always better when Steph Curry's playing.
Yeah, and Zion Williamson got injured in that loss to the Lakers, so we'll see if he he's not going to be available for the next game that's going to decide their season. So we'll see what happens there. Tonight in the East, Heat 76ers in the first game. Hawks Bulls tonight as the East starts its play-in action. This one was interesting
to
me.
You're telling me it's Dominique versus MJ tonight?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be locked into that.
Yeah, that means
with Skip Carey on the call.
What that means is that Dominique's going for 55, but the Bulls are going to win by 28.
No question. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. This was interesting. Andrew Luck made his first public appearance in Indianapolis over the weekend. Boy, what just an odd conclusion to his career.
Well, he was an odd guy from the get-go. We all saw the stories about how he just wasn't like everybody else. He didn't take football seriously. You're right. He looks like your thin neighbor who just got a job at the accounting practice.
Yeah.
And comes
or
home.
Or just made partner.
Yeah. Or
they do that in accounting?
I don't know. But he's that guy.
Yeah.
Comes home, probably mows his own lawn.
Yeah.
You know, walks the dog.
Right.
And that's who he looks like. He doesn't look
Reads
like.
Reads Architectural Digest.
Correct. Yeah. But what he doesn't look like is one of the most talented quarterback prospects in the history of the sport. That's what he does not look like.
Would you be interested in a Frank Sinatra biopic?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. If it was really good, if it was real.
I've got an A-list for
you.
Yes. Okay, so I can put you down for this
movie?
Yes. Okay, good. So Variety is reporting that Martin Scorsese is interested in making a Sinatra film.
Yes.
The chairman of the board would be played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
I could live with that.
With Jennifer Lawrence playing his second wife, Ava Gardner.
I can see both. Yeah. I think just from, you never know till the movie comes out. But that seems like very good casting. DiCaprio's Sinatra is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many Oscars is that thing going to get?
Yeah, I mean,
certainly a lot of nominations.
My mom was a big Sinatra fan. I would like that.
Yeah. Will he sing?
I would think he'd have to.
Nowadays, that's what they want to do, though. Nowadays, they want the actors to do the singing.
Yeah.
They don't want to bring in voice person.
I don't know if I can hear, Leo being Francis.
Yeah.
That might hurt his legacy if he's terrible.
But think about it. But that's what they want now.
Yeah.
The guy that played Elvis, they want them to do the singing. That's kind of the thing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That one's probably a ways off because they're just getting it into development. Want to say happy birthday, Tony Baselli.
How about that?
The greatest
Big
Jaguar
Bo?
Ever. Hall of Famer turns 52 today.
Have you seen Bo lately?
I have not. Has he lost weight?
I think he weighs like 180.
Really?
I think he's 6'7". I had dinner with him a week or two ago. I think he's about 240.
Wow.
This is a guy that played at 323.
Yeah.
He will tell you, and if he won't, I will tell you, that he got up to it in the mid 350s, like not that many years ago.
Yeah.
And he's lost like 100 pounds. He looks great.
He works hard.
He works hard. He works out very hard.
Yeah.
He looks great. I'll never say anything nice to him.
Right.
But I was hoping he's not listening. He looks great. He's got himself in great shape.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Tony Baselli.
Happy birthday, Bo.
On this date, Roberto Clemente makes his Major League Baseball debut in 1955 goes 1-for-4 at the plate. Clemente was 20 years and 242 days old. He became the 11,225th player in Major League Baseball history.
That's great stuff. One of my favorite players of all time, who was traded by the Dodgers to the Pirates. Dodgers didn't need him. Okay, Roberto Clemente, one of the most dynamic players in the history of the sport. I would say a top 10 player. I think you could call him a top 10 player. He's not a top 5 player, but I think he's a top 10 player in the history of the sport.
Oh, man, that's good stuff. On this date in 2011, Game of Thrones premieres on HBO. Probably it was a great show, and I was one of the few people that liked it, like, start to finish, because a lot of people didn't like how it ended. But the theme and the intro to the show each week was the best I've ever seen in TV.
Really? This won't shock you that I know nothing about Game of Thrones. But I will tell you, among the things that I know nothing about and never followed, it's the thing you hear the most about over the years. Of the HBO, Cinemax, Showtime shows that are, and now the Netflix and all the streaming services, of all the ones you hear talk about, I don't know that if even me, who's not a follower, heard more about
more anything than The Sopranos.
Okay, Sopranos right there.
It'd be
okay.
In the conversation.
I'll give you number two.
I would agree. I think it would be certainly in the conversation.
Right, yes. I'm just saying people are still talking about The Sopranos today.
But it's right there.
Yeah,
right there.
And it was in the Twitter world. You know, The Sopranos wasn't. So, the last season, really, when people were waiting to see how it would end, man, it was epic on Twitter.
Like, were you a fan of Game of Thrones?
I read all the books.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so I never actually watched the show until the last season. And I was like, I'm not going to – I literally went years of my life, not telling any of my friends what happened. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to be the guy that finds out from my friends who are watching the show how it ended. I can't wait for the last book, which still isn't out.
It's amazing.
By the way.
Yeah, he's been working on that for, 15 years now. Yeah. But that is going to do it.
Well done. That is Hayes Headlines, brought to you by our friends at Harrell & Harrell. Holt Harrell & Company, what a great job they do. Good Jacksonville law firm, and they're good folks. I promise you that. We'll take a break. We got an hour to go. When we come back, I'm going to introduce you to a potential college football super league. You don't get how many days you get a super league?
Not often.
I mean, in drive time, a drive time super league.
Yeah,
doesn't get any better than that. That's next on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on the Frangie Show. Ricketts Electric, the power connection you can trust.
You just sit back and listen over there, Carlion, okay?
I'm not sure I'm familiar
you
with
you just sit
is this
back.
Like the Frangie Dance
you
Club
just
remix
sit
of the
back
replay?
And listen is your job right now, okay? Hang on. You've gone too far this time. Did you know 40 years ago today?
Wow.
Duran Duran, turn that up, JJ. Released the replay.
How about
40 years? Is it really been 40 years?
That's incredible.
Since the Reflex came out?
I remember when the video came out. That's amazing. That is amazing.
JJ,
maybe that's the biopic that Scorsese should be working on, is Simon Le Bon and Duran Duran.
I hope DiCaprio's ready to play
now
Duran.
Now, that's a role DiCaprio will nail.
JJ, I've told this story on the air many times. I've told Hayes this. When this came out in the 80s, I kind of liked him. But you really, when you were hanging out, you were 20-something or whatever you were, you know, you couldn't really admit you liked Duran Duran. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you had the band that you liked him. You really couldn't tell anybody.
I really only know Hungry Like a Wolf.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I could see that, this being more of like a feminine type
band. Yeah, I mean, if you're a macho guy and you're hanging out with your macho single
you're
guy.
You're in the car, you're not throwing you're
drinking,
this on.
You're drinking beer and talking man's macho stuff. And someone said,
I think I'm going to put on the Duran Duran record.
Duran Duran. Oh, that's stupid.
Put in 7 in the Rag Tiger.
That's stupid. Yeah. Wear a pink shirt with your Duran Duran music, you know? So
I was like,
but I kind of liked it. I just couldn't admit that. I kind of liked it.
I loved it. But it was a kid, and we all loved it. But the music video, again, they were one of the first bands that really, I think, capitalized on MTV.
And hey, you really, JJ, you know, don't know if you know this, but Hayes, I'm serious about this, like, really, really knows a lot about the music videos because it was part of your formative years.
Yeah, just growing up, watched MTV morning, noon, and night. And this video was cool because it would be a lousy effect now. I'm sure it doesn't hold up if you go watch it on YouTube. But it's a concert video, but at the end, this water comes from above the band and hits the crowd, which at the time in 1984 was incredibly cool to do in a music video.
Yeah, no question. I, you know me, probably my favorite all-time music video is probably Rio.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big video guy.
Right, it's fantastic.
It's a fantastic one. So there you go.
Hungry Like the Wolf is a fantastic video.
Yes,
they did a good job with that.
Is there anything worse than a concert music video, though?
Yeah,
it depends.
It seems lazy.
Yeah, it's almost like the on the road music video. Like they're getting in the bus, and you know it's a long, hard day after a show, and all the groupies, and it's easy.
The Motley Crue video for Wildside was a concert video, but it was cool because it introduced that Tommy Lee spinning drum set.
Oh, yeah.
So which they actually did do in concert too, but I don't think anybody knew that. They hadn't launched their tour, and so that was kind of a cool effect for a live video. But yeah, for the most part, you want to go the Peter Gabriel route and do something really abstract and cool.
That is our look back at 80s music. Tomorrow, Madonna and Cyndi Lauper. Okay, so just so you don't think we're stopping. This group called College Sports Tomorrow has recommended this College Football Super League. Have you seen it?
I have.
College Football Super League. There's a lot of entities to it. Sportico had the story. Broadcast revenue share, a rev share for players. There's a 40-game spring football festival, so you play somebody else in the spring one time. 7 geographically aligned leagues, and an 8th under league with relegation, so you get relegated. And I'm sure by now you've seen the leagues, or the way the divisions break down. Let me go through some of them. The West, Arizona State, Cal, Oregon State, Stanford, the ones you would imagine. The Southwest, Arkansas, Baylor, Houston, Oklahoma State, Texas, Texas A&M, all those guys. The Midwest, Cincinnati, Illinois, Indiana, Louisville, Michigan State, blah, 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 Ohio State's in there. The East, so it would separate Penn State from the Midwest teams, which makes sense. Boston College, Maryland, Notre Dame, Penn State, Pitt, blah, blah, blah. You can imagine the Virginia schools. Now it gets interesting. And you've seen this, right, Hayes?
Yeah.
The Southeast. Not to be confused with the South.
Right.
The Southeast. Clemson, Duke, Miami, NC State, North Carolina, South Carolina, Central Florida, Wake Forest, Florida State, and Florida. Bro, they just took Florida and stuck them in the ACC.
They just took them and put them in the ACC. Yeah.
The South. Alabama, Auburn, Georgia Tech, Kentucky, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. So they just switched Georgia Tech and Florida.
Yeah.
So
it's terrible.
And they added UCF.
It is terrible. If I was an SEC snob, which I would never be, the path sure got easier.
Oh, the path's easier.
The path, it would be boring. It'd be a boring year.
Yeah. With,
and so, and then the and then there's a relegation league. So it's a 70-team league. Other than yanking Florida out of the South and putting them in the Southeast, if they flopped Florida back, Florida and Georgia Tech switched. Okay,
right.
So if Georgia Tech, of course, it wouldn't make sense if they went Georgia and Georgia Tech together. But if Georgia Tech and Florida switched, so then you'd have more true SEC and more true ACC. Would you like this 70-team league?
I prefer the model where the SEC and Big Ten just split off.
And swallow everyone cool and pick up a couple others.
So I would like the number to be more around 40 than 70. I don't think we need 70 teams. I mean, show me any historical evidence that there are 70 teams that legitimately compete at this sport's highest level.
You don't think Syracuse and Indiana and Rutgers?
I don't think Jim Brown's walking through that door. Or what's the guy, the fan club, Kirby Dardar.
Kirby Dardar fan club. Still the greatest banner of all time. Did you know that one, JJ?
I have no idea what you guys are referencing.
When Florida lost to Syracuse in 1991, a guy named Kirby Dardar, that's D-A-R-D-A-R, ran back a kick for the opening kickoff, and they beat the hell out of Florida.
He killed Florida.
And the banner said, Kirby, Kirby, Dar, Dar, Fan, Fan, Club, Club. Still the greatest banner of all time.
It's
now been voted as the greatest banner of all time. It's voted by me. It's now been voted the greatest football banner of all time.
And I would second that. I just don't think there's that many schools that legitimately compete. I think the best model is more of a NFL model. It's where you're going with everything else. So why would you divide the revenue up 70 ways with schools that just frankly don't deserve to be at the table? I mean, if you look at their football acumen, don't deserve to be at the table. So to me, I would take the SEC. I would take the Big Ten. I would certainly take the heavyweight schools that are not in those two conferences, and that would be the league. And I wouldn't relegate it. I would say, you know, these are the 40. They're going to be the 40 every year, and I would operate it like the NFL. I mean, obviously, the NFL does 32. That number's too low. So you'd have to come up with a model, but I think 40 would work, and you'd have 20 on each side, and you know the winner of each conference plays for the national championship.
Let me ask you both this: where do you think the FSU Clemson versus ACC thing goes? You go first, Ace. Where do you think that? Because I got a thought about that. Where do you think that lands?
I think they get out of it. I think ultimately it's probably settled. And Florida State and the schools that want out come up with the money to get out.
And to buy back their media rights.
Correct.
That's part of the whole business model as well.
Yeah. So I think ultimately it gets settled and Florida State ends up in the big – most of these schools, I think, end up in the Big Ten for now.
Not the SEC.
Not the SEC, unless the SEC and Big Ten have basically just said, hey, we're 2 years away from doing this, but we're going to do it. So go ahead and take them now, because ultimately it's just going to be – one entity anyway.
Well, JJ, what do you think it is?
Yeah, I don't think the SEC is done gobbling people up, and I don't think the Big Ten is either. I think FSU falls on the sword for everyone else. And when FSU leaves, obviously Miami and Clemson are going to be like, hey, this obviously wasn't the same thing we signed up for. And so they're going to be able to get out of it easier than them, probably cheaper. And when that happens, I think, like Hayes said earlier, talking about the Super League, I think we're just going to have two massive conferences. And everyone else will be on the sideline playing whatever division we're going to call FCS now. And so I think like the Clemsons, Miamis, North Carolinas will survive.
I agree with that. I think regardless of how the configuration is, I've thought long and hard about this. I think we overthink it sometimes. I think they're all getting out of it too, by the way. I think Florida State and Clemson wind up in the Southeastern Conference. And I think North Carolina, Virginia wind up in the Big Ten, then we'll see about Miami, and then we'll see about NC State and Duke and the others. But the more I think about this, the SEC has gone after football schools. The SEC has not gone after markets, because when they got Texas and Oklahoma, the only market of significance that came with them is Dallas, and they already had it. They had Dallas with Texas A&M. Now, Texas A&M geographically is closer to Houston than it is Dallas, but they didn't get Texas and Oklahoma because they wanted the Dallas TV market, because they already had it. They got Texas and Oklahoma because they wanted the eyes on good football teams. FSU and Clemson fit that model. They're in the contiguous states, which Greg Sankey says is an important deal to him. Now, so would North Carolina would be too once you added them. And then Virginia would be if you added North Carolina. But I think at the end of the day, FSU, Clemson wind up in the SEC. I think North Carolina and Virginia wind up in the Big Ten. Then we'll see what – Miami, based on that logic, would make sense in the SEC. But, and JJ, get your thoughts on this, the one thing the Big Ten does do is want markets. They would love the – what they don't have is Florida. It's about all they don't have is the Deep South. So I could see Miami to the Big Ten, because Miami, by the way, is also a very good academic school.
And they're a national brand.
And it's a national – as USC is –
like, they're much bigger everywhere else than in the state of Florida. Yeah. You know, Florida State own the state.
Yeah.
Miami, they're still big. They won back in the day.
Yeah, now they've got to at some point win again.
Tell me about it.
To keep the bigness, they got to at some point win again.
Yeah, our fan base nationwide is guys like in their 40s and 50s.
That's right.
Can you imagine a Miami versus USC game, and it's a Big Ten conference game?
Right.
Well, dude, we're playing Cal in an ACC
game. I know,
game.
I get it. It's just a crazy world.
The new world of college football.
But your point is right. JJ's point is right. If you turn on a television and Michigan's playing Miami, you will notice. If Michigan's playing Virginia, you will be bored.
Right.
And that even Virginia's football team is better than Miami's.
Exactly.
As far as recognizing the brand, you will pay attention if Michigan and Miami are – if those two logos are playing – you'll pay attention. So it's interesting stuff. So we'll see what winds up happening. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to go to one more time, one of my pet peeves in sports. Can I hear it? But it's a serious pet peeve. It's not a clowny, but I've got some, you know what I got for you? Data. When's the last time you had
something?
We're not doing a shout today. We don't have a shout topic today. Okay. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to throw a little data at you. And I'm going to go on just a little minor rant. Can I do a minor rant?
Love it.
It's next. This is 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on The Frangie Show. Ricketts Electric, the power connection you can trust.
Hey, Frangie, it's Carline. JJ LaSelva with you. Do you want to thank our friends from Ricketts Electric? Always a Ricketts Electric Wednesday here. Zach Ricketts is a good dude. He did all the electrical work for our brand new ballpark, the walk-off baseball park, which is the Bragan Baseball Complex over there at Fort Family. He's also going to handle all of our personal stuff. If you need an electrician, call Ricketts Electric. The number is 904-320-5960, a Ricketts Electric Wednesday here on the program. Last year, 18 major league pitchers averaged 95.8 miles per hour or faster on their fastball. They average now, okay? You with me on that?
They throw an average pitch.
Their average pitch was 95.8. Wow. 18, which is never heard of before, obviously. 18 of them. You know how many had Tommy John?
16.
Well, not that, but okay. But seriously, half of them.
Yeah.
I want you to hear this again. 18 guys, JJ.
That's crazy.
Average 95. Strider is one. I don't know who all of them are, but.
Probably Strider, Bieber.
Bieber's one of them. 18 pitchers.
Walker Buehler, maybe.
Had 90, averaged 95.8. Half of them are down for a year and a half with Tommy John.
Ohtani.
He's one of them. Half. I mean, 9 of the 18 are done for a year and a half. What are we doing? I mean, is that the craziest stat you've ever heard?
Got to be a culture change.
It's got to be the craziest stat I've ever heard. Up until they came up with Tommy John, actually, in the 70s, believe it or not, or 88. No, Tommy John pitched in the 70s, my bad. In the 90s, the peak of Tommy John surgeries was there was 160 of them with professional players, 160 in 2015. And it went down until it peaked again last year. It was 155, then 150 last year. So last night I'm watching the Pirates game, okay? And he had this really good young pitcher, this guy Jared Jones, not even Skeens. I mean, he's unbelievably good. He's 22 years old. He hits 100. JJ, you know who he is, Jared Jones? Have you followed
him?
So he hits 100 every third or fourth fastball. He throws really hard. Last night he's pitching against the Mets. 59 pitches, 50 for strikes, which you never heard of.
Whoa.
Which you've never heard of. Strikes out 7, walks none, 1 little blooper hit. They pulled him. They pulled him at 59 pitches. So obviously Pirate Nation killed him. Hickens texted me last night. What are you doing? You deserve to have us beat your butt because you're pulling your guy with 59. So they said, listen, if we don't, he's throwing 100. When he has the Tommy John, which he's going to have, we'd rather it be next year than in a month. That's the world we're in. Now, think about that. That's the world we're in. What are we doing with our young pitchers? If 18 guys average 95.8 miles per hour or more in Major League Baseball and 9 had Tommy John, don't we have to change? I'm serious about this. Don't you have to change that?
Well, I will say this. You need to talk to Gibby about this because he just did an interview for his show about this topic, and it's fascinating. He was telling me about it in the hallway. So, Gibby, if you're in here or if you're around, come on in. But basically, they're reconstructing how they do the surgery.
Okay.
So it's,
maybe Lance Snyder was on with him. Maybe
that's
maybe,
who I think
okay,
it was.
Who's a great arm doctor.
Yeah, and I hate to steal Gibby's thunder here, so hopefully he'll pop in. Here he is. Yeah. But so listen to this because it's really interesting, and it might speak to why they're conserving him now.
Yeah.
To maybe have him go more towards the end.
Yeah, this guy just hitting 100 for the Pirates last night, Jared.
Unbelievable.
They yanked him at 59 pitches, 50 strikes.
So
but 18 pitchers last year averaged 95.8 miles per hour on their fastball. 18.
Yeah.
Nine of the 18 have had Tommy John. It's crazy.
Yeah, the current average fastball in major leagues is 94.
Okay.
That's the average right now. Right. But to your what you're saying, and you helped me set up Lance Snyder from JOI.
Yeah, good guy, good friend.
Have you heard of the internal brace procedure?
No.
So this is
not Tommy John?
No. Well, it's
a form of Tommy John?
It's a form of Tommy John. And basically what it is they've only had this for like 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
And so Spencer Strider for the Braves just had it. And so what it is normally with Tommy John, you take a tendon from either your wrist or your knee or something like that from elsewhere in the body. With this, they have this like high strength suture, like a stitch.
Okay.
They put in your elbow instead of a tendon, and guys are coming back in half the time.
Really?
And
so it's an artificial ligament. It's not a real ligament from other parts of your body.
Correct.
That's what it is.
And he said, Dr. Snyder told me he's done over 100 of these. And it's only
Lance Snyder, who's now here in town with JOI,
right.
Was the team doctor for the Royals. For many years. Great, great Tommy John doctor.
And he works with the Jumbo Shrimp and the Marlins too now.
Yeah.
But he said that there's a company that's come up with, one of his buddies came up with the procedure 3 or 4 years ago. This is very new. And he said that what they've done is they've developed this suture that you can't pull it apart. Like it's woven and wound like thousands of times and you can't pull it apart. And
so it can't break again.
That's what the theory is.
The theory, correct. The theory is that...
And you come back much faster.
And he said that he's done over 100 of these, and he's had people come back in 6 months.
I'll be darned.
And the typical Tommy John is a year.
Yeah.
Now, it varies.
It's a minimum year.
A year, correct. It varies depending on each person, right?
Right.
So it can be a year plus. It could be a little bit less than that. But he told me last night in an interview that I'm going to air on Sunday that he has had somebody that he's done this internal brace procedure on that was back to game situation in 6 months.
Wow, that is amazing.
And that's what Spencer Strider, by the way, Braves fans, Spencer Strider just had this.
Well,
he's not going to be back this year, but he supposedly he'll be back good as new next spring training.
And 6 months is way better than a year and a half.
Right.
And so they I'm glad you shared that. I didn't know that.
I'd never heard of it. I've never even heard of internal brace.
You just said it. I haven't either.
And he's fascinating with the conversation.
Yeah, and Lance is a good guy. And he's a really good doctor, and he knows that stuff better than anybody. But I still, and I've told Lance this.
Yep.
Lance is a friend of mine, so I've told him this. I still think we're doing something wrong with the way we're training our pitchers and the culture we have, even if it's 6 months. Now, the 6 months is way better. And Hayes, give the medical community credit for finding something to do. Because it's such an epidemic problem, but it still blows my mind that this is happening.
It's remarkable, but the solution wasn't gonna be able to be found in changing the way the sports played. You know, we're just not gonna be able to legislate it to where we're gonna slow down velocity, and we know it's gonna keep going up. So the only good thing is if medical science can develop something. It does make it to the point with the pitcher you're talking about last night. So maybe they're thinking if the Pirates believe in this surgery that Strider just had, then maybe their thinking is, well, let's not put too much stress on it early. But as we get to closer to the end of the year, then we can turn them loose because even if he blows it, in 6 months we'll have him back.
Well, I'll tell you this. This will be a good case study because this guy, Jerry Jones, is only 22. He's never had an arm problem, as Strider had never had an arm problem.
Well, Strider had Tommy John at Clemson.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
he already had it, too.
This is his second one.
Oh, I didn't know.
Same with Ohtani.
Okay.
Yeah, Ohtani.
A lot of these guys are getting two now.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of guys out there that had two.
And it seems like this might fix that as well.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Well, that's right. But I'm going to keep an eye on this guy. I mean,
looks like DeGrom.
Yeah, he does. But I'm telling you, this guy, he throws 100. He's really good. Let's see. if he has any either kind of surgery, then they'll know. And by the way, I will say this, and Gibby's baseball guy and JJ's baseball guy, so we're all in here together. I'm telling you, you'll think this is crazy. You'll tell me it's the dumbest thing you ever heard. But I did wonder if for health purposes they needed to think about legislating velocity. I know it sounds crazy. You know these slow-pitch softball tournaments? They slow-pitch forever. If you watch the old Warren Motors when I grew up in Jacksonville, they were home run derbies. Well, now in some of these slow-pitch softball tournaments, there's a home run limit. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. I played in those.
Yeah, so there's a home run limit.
It's either a single.
Yeah,
usually.
Correct. Or an out.
Or an out, yeah.
So if you hit one, I never thought a baseball or softball would limit how many times you can hit the ball far. But that's the only way the games could be competitive.
Well, when I played, we had, like, you could only pitch a certain amount of innings, like, every few days. So there is, in Little League and all the way up to high school, like, there is limits that they set on kids and how they can pitch in these leagues. Yeah. But once you get – dude, if you watch college baseball, it's criminal, man, how they abuse these pitchers because they know there's no – you know, they're only there for a couple years, and they don't care about their future. And, you'll see these kids at JU that are throwing, like, 110 pitches.
Yeah, and by the way, high schools have a pitch limit, too.
They do.
There's pitch limit until you get to college. But I really thought to save all these guys' arms, you might have to limit velocity. And Hayes, you said, and it's probably never going to happen, but it did. I mean, listen, we limit how hard you can hit quarterbacks. We limit a lot of, you know. Well, I never thought we'd limit how hard you can hit a quarterback, how hard you can hit a receiver. Well, we've done that now. We've limited how hard you can hit a football player. We call it different things. We call it hands to the face. We call it what's the phraseology? Unprotected receiver or
unabated.
What's the thing with receiver? The
defenseless.
Defenseless. We call it defenseless receiver. What we're really saying is you can only hit so hard. Yeah, we're now mitigating how hard you can hit a football player. I thought baseball might do that.
But wouldn't that be like we're sort of hindering like the best of the best?
Yeah,
we're not letting like these talented kids be themselves.
Which is why we're not doing it. But again, you're doing it in football. Back in the day, the best defensive players are the ones that hit the hardest. Jack Tatum had a reputation. Jack Lambert had a reputation. Ronnie Lott had a reputation. Kenny Easley. Who could hit the hardest? Well, now, if you're a football player that hits the hardest, you're going to become the football player who's the most penalized.
Yeah, and going back to the internal brace, that is this breakthrough procedure that they're doing now that's only been around 3 to 4 years. Dr. Snyder said that the guy who developed this is one of his medical buddies, another doctor who trained under James Andrews.
Right.
The guy who created this, they call him Jimmy. Everybody calls him Jimmy. In the doctor world, they call him Jimmy Andrews. We don't know him as James. They know him as Jimmy.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I may now call him Jimmy. Okay. So there's
old best friends.
But anyway, but we'll be listening. When's it on Sunday?
11 o'clock on Sunday. I've got the head coach of Tocoi Creek is coming in. Okay. Philip Wisser. They've had a really good season.
Yep.
Two of their senior players are coming in the studio as well. Coach Dr. Snyder's coming on. And then Alex Lodis, the shortstop at Florida State from Bartram Trail, is coming in also.
They'll all be here on Sunday. Gibby will have it for you. A lot of baseball talk, but including that fascinating topic with Lance Snyder. So, Gibby,
appreciate
thanks
it,
for stopping by. We appreciate it. Take a break. One segment to go. We'll have it for you after this. Stay with us.
Doors, please.
Time now for the SkyLife Elite Take Flight Moment of the Week. SkyLife Elite, North Florida's premier private air charter.
Another fastball, and look out, face on the scoreboard. That actually might hit it. That went over the scoreboard, ladies and gentlemen, here at the Condren Ballpark. Another jack for Jack, 21st of the year, and that's 7 straight games that he has left the yard.
I've never seen anybody hit a baseball wearing orange and blue like this guy. He's been nothing short of amazing.
Wow.
The scoreboard.
516 feet, Frank.
Dude, he's hit a home run in 7 straight games. Did you see that?
Ugh.
A college player's hit a home run in 7 straight games.
It's incredible. I mean, what he is doing is incredible. Cags is batting 400. You heard it, 21 home runs. That is second in the nation. Florida gets a win over JU last night. That is our Take Flight Moment of the Week. Give our friends at SkyLife Elite a call at 490-9332. Again, if you're tired of unruly passengers, canceled flights, layovers, look into chartered flights. Our friends at SkyLife Elite can help you with that. Again, you can also find them at flyskylife.com, North Florida's premier private air charter.
Yeah, and if you want to travel, you can afford. I keep telling you this, you can afford those charter flights, so you ought to get one if you're going somewhere anytime soon. College baseball, the Rumbles this weekend, JU and UNF, three games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we won't be out there because the game doesn't start till 7. So we'd be off the air an hour before the first pitch. So, but we'll be telling you all about it. Chris Hayes and Joe Mercadante's teams play. And again, JU still tied for first, I think, in the conference. UNF's been sort of up and down in the conference. JU, by the way, they've had so many injuries. They lost Alama Lohr, who's such a good player for them. They just lost Justin Nadeau, the kid from Bartram Prairie, who's such a good player. One of the best hitters in the league, just down for like 6 weeks now with a broken hand. So they've had some tough injuries. They lost big to Florida last night. Florida, meanwhile, well, FSU is great under Link Jaridan. I knew they would be. I told you that, man. Everybody said, last year when they weren't very good, Frank, you didn't know what you're talking about. No, no, yeah, I did. He was cleaning house, and he made them very good. Florida, meanwhile, and you hear the Florida games here on our air, I am shocked they're this bad. Florida is 19-17, Hayes. They're 7-8 in the league, and they're about to play a three-game set at Vanderbilt. I mean, they're about to go on the road to number 13 Vanderbilt. They come home to play Arkansas, who's really good. I'm telling you, they could miss the NCAA tournament, which is unheard of.
Absolutely, because they could have a losing record. So yeah, they've got to get going. There's still enough time. That if Florida starts to play good baseball, and you have to think it's in there somewhere,
right?
That if Florida can get hot, then you know they can right the ship and perhaps be a dangerous team. But they're out of mulligans. I mean they've got to start now. And we'll see. But man, that would just be stunning to see them finish it with a losing mark. And
think about this. They're playing at Vanderbilt, who's 13th. Then after midweek game against Stetson, they go to Arkansas, who's second, ranked second nationally. Then they play three home games against Tennessee, who's fourth nationally. And then they go to play home games against Kentucky, who is another rank. I thought not long ago. Did they fall out? Maybe they fell out. But Kentucky's got a very good team too. I mean, they're playing really. I thought Kentucky was ranked. Maybe I missed it. But you get the drift.
Well, the good news is if they are able to get hot, then
yeah, that's right.
They will quickly build their resume back up.
Yeah, they even play Georgia at the end. Even Georgia's now ranked. Georgia's ranked 24th. So you get the – and they play Georgia at the end. So they're playing a bunch of ranked teams coming up. I mean
– Do you think they can find it, or is it just
– I don't think they can pitch well enough. What an interesting thing is when they went to play Missouri, they lost 3 one-run games. They couldn't get a big hit. It wasn't pitching entirely. They couldn't get a big hit. I think now there's so much parity in college baseball because LSU's struggling too, and they're the two teams that made the finals. I think when you lose your handful of good players, what also happens is a lot of your mediocre players have left because they think they're never playing. So when Wyatt Langford leaves Florida and Skeens and Dylan Cruz leave LSU, they've also lost 5, 6, 8 depth pieces because they're on two of the best programs in the country. So they're going to go to play to Mercer and Tulane instead where they can play. So it's a double whammy. And what winds up happening is the teams that were so good a year ago aren't very good. That's what's happening to these teams.
And, in terms of Florida State, I mean.
Boy, they're so good.
What would you guess? Where's Florida State ranked? Because I know for a while their ranking really didn't illustrate their start.
They're 8th, but I still think they're better. They're 30-5. They're ranked 8th. I think they're better than that. They just for whatever reason they've been bad for a while. So the voters have had trouble. That's on D1 Baseball, which is kind of the Bible.
Yeah.
Baseball America also does one, and Baseball America has them. Hang on, I'll tell you shortly.
Fifth.
Okay, so Baseball America's got them 5th.
I don't think Florida State has lost to Florida or Miami this year.
Yeah. No, they didn't. They swept both.
Yeah.
How about that? So Baseball America has them 5th. D1 Baseball's got them 8th. They're 30-5. Which is I think
they lost last night.
30-6.
Who beat them? Who beat them last night?
I think it was Mercer. Okay, is that so right, JJ?
But of those six losses, of the three losses, three were on the road.
You're a Mercer alum, right?
Three of the losses were at Clemson.
It was Mercer,
who's,
yeah.
Who's really good. So anyway, so.
And they face Wake this weekend, who I'm assuming has a great team.
Yeah, Wake's very good. Wake had last year. Wake was like ranked first forever. Remember that?
Right.
They were ranked. So we'll see. But anyway, so tough times for the Gators. Folks, that'll do it for our program. Thanks for being part of it. Tomorrow, same bad time, same bad channel. Our friend Lee Smith will be in here, the executive director of the Players Championship and our golf analyst. He'll be here at 4:15 tomorrow. Boy, he'll have a lot of golf to talk about, including yet another win for Scottie Scheffler. Is Rick back? Rick's back tonight, right?
He is.
Don't go anywhere. Rick Ballew goes into the night. That comes up right now. For Hayes and JJ, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.